WNYC Studios is supported by the community of writers, presenting live online short courses in the Writer's Annex. Upcoming in 2024, Sylvia Plath, James Joyce's Ulysses, and Emily Dickinson. Instructors include Victoria Chang, Robert Haas, Brenda Hillman, Peter Orner, and Matthew Zapruder. Learn more at communityofwriters.org.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We're going to start off today with the election. But I don't mean the election, the midterm congressional election. The election we're going to talk about today is taking place on another continent altogether. It's a city council race in Jerusalem. A man named Ramadan Dabash, an Arab community leader, is running for a seat on the city council, and he's been making international headlines for doing so. How come? Well, first of all, in the Arab community of East Jerusalem, there's a long-standing taboo on participating in city politics. The Palestinians there see it as legitimizing Israeli rule. So Ramadan Dabash is taking a huge risk in his own community. And he's doing so at a time when Israeli-Palestinian relationships are at an absolute low. Bernard Avishai is a New Yorker contributor who's a longtime resident of Jerusalem, and he recently met up with a candidate, Ramadan Dabash. Bernie, who is Ramadan Dabash and why is he such a big story?
Ramadan is the Mukhtar of Sur Bakr, which is in the southern part of the city. As Mukhtar, he's really head of a council of influential families. If this were a larger village, he'd be like the mayor, but it's not. So he's like head of the neighborhood council. The other thing about Dabash is that he's kind of a hybrid. On the one hand, he's a very traditional guy. He's a traditional Muslim. He has four wives. He brags about 12 children. On the other hand, he's pretty modern. He's an engineer. He's taken his degrees in Israel, and he teaches in Israeli colleges.
Okay.
So I met with Ramadan, drove into Sur Bakr just very recently. Hi, Ramadan. Hi.
Shalom.
Hi, shalom, shalom. Hi,
shalom. Shalom.
As you see here.
I interviewed him in English. Before that, I had talked with him in Hebrew, and I must say he's far more articulate in Hebrew than he is in English. But if he were speaking in Hebrew, you would see not only how much more trenchant his ideas are, but also how much of a charisma that he has.
We need cooperation here to be before. Cooperation to make peace before. And that's it. I think it's no problem for us.
Let's step inside and talk about it.
You like to drink some coffee or tea?
Bernie, what exactly is Ramadan campaigning on?
It's all about infrastructure. It's about social services, the kind of things that municipal governments deliver. What kind of services are you talking about?
I talk the services for, oh, first of all, the buildings. They are destroyed, many of buildings here and Arab places here, because they don't have a license for it.
And, building permit.
Building permit, yes. This kind of service we need. The second thing, we need the education service and the schools. And we need roads we don't have. Also, we don't have pools. We don't have enough places for the old men and women and for the child. We don't have enough service. Because that, we need to change our mind and to start in the first step here to be inside the municipality.
Bernie, if he wins and he gets on the city council, how effective can he be? And how can he come across as a successful politician to his constituency?
Well, he's already shown that he knows how to work the system. Just as the Mukhtar of his neighborhood, he successfully squeezed millions, really, out of the Jerusalem government for infrastructure, including the community center we were sitting in. The point is that that's hardly enough at this point.
We need 3 or 4 billion shekels here in the East Bank to be a good life here.
That's billion with a B.
Yes, that's the billion with a B.
And what you managed to get for Tzur Bachar before was something like 300 million over how many years?
Four years, yes. 3-4 years.
So there's a big gap there to close.
Yes, a big gap to close, because if it is 50 years until this day, nothing move, yeah. Nothing interesting for us.
You're a secular Jew who lives in a particularly more or less secular neighborhood of West Jerusalem, right. But the city is becoming more and more Hasidic and the rest. What does that imply as a political challenge to him on the council?
It seems that the Orthodox community is actually quite open to making deals on infrastructure projects, because in many ways they mirror his problem. For the most part, these are fairly right-wing people who see the city as being annexed, see the Arab population as being inevitably part of Israel, and so are becoming more and more open to investing on that side of the line. I should say here that part of the reason why he's running here, he's really trying to gain genuine political leverage. He's not just interested in counting on his ability to recruit goodwill on the other side. At the same time, ironically, he's taken as a political advisor a Likud activist, not at all a secular liberal, but an Orthodox Jew who's extremely supportive of the settlement movement. So it was quite an eerie feeling to be sitting there talking to Ramadan on the one hand and listening to his advisor whisper to him, and his advisor sitting there with a knitted yarmulke and a clipboard full of data.
Ramadan, you're running with some political advisors.
Yes, this is, he's Mr. Gilad. He's give me service for advisors, my political advisors.
Gilad, would you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Gilad Israeli.
It's not usual that people wearing knitted yarmulkes are interested in helping to elect Palestinians to the Municipal Council of Jerusalem. Tell me about yourself.
I'm from the right wing of the political map in Israel. And I think in the recent years, after the right wing in Israel established himself, people started to realize that you can't say we want Jerusalem united and Jerusalem belongs to Israel and ignore the people who live in Jerusalem. If you want Jerusalem united, Jerusalem is not just lands. Jerusalem is also people living in these lands. And you need to unite the people, the Arab people and the Jewish people around the city, around the Israeli Jerusalem city.
I have to say, Bernie, this is a remarkable thing. Here's an Orthodox right-wing Jewish Israeli trying to get a Palestinian elected to the Jerusalem City Council. I don't quite get his motives.
Well, I'd be lying if I said I did.
But it's kind of incredible. On the one hand, you've got the Orthodox Jewish Israeli whose vision of the future is that all of Jerusalem, to say nothing of the West Bank, be included in what we have long called Greater right. Israel. Whereas Ramadan is clinging to what we've called for now many, many years, the two-state solution, in which there would be a Palestinian state formed out of what we call the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem.
Right.
There it's such innate ideological loggerheads, and to see them sitting there together with you, to hear them together with you, in common political cause is mind-boggling.
Well, naturally, I put the question to both of them. Can you see this as a model for Palestinian-Israeli relations in the future?
I think the Jewish side is afraid to lose his majority. That is why I don't think the Jews in Israel will want to make the Palestinians an equal citizens. However, there are some raising approaches that the Palestinians will have local authorities, vast local authorities to run their own lives with an Israeli authority like in East Jerusalem today.
So Gilad has a vision of the future where the Arabs are slowly brought in through municipal governments and are given a great deal of autonomy within Greater Israel. Is that your view as well?
I don't want to be in the future in a big jail, like a Gaza Strip or like the Palestinian Authority. The problem here is the people, first of all, to be equal like the Jewish people. And also to be in the United Jerusalem and the Palestinian to be part of this United. So this is my idea. I think it's the people also need this idea.
So the two of you may not necessarily have the same long-term vision, but you're willing to see the importance of the short-term cooperation.
I want to be freedom, first of all, to be freedom, to be person, to be, I have, like the another side, like the, I am a human, like the Jewish people.
But Bernie, I must ask you, as somebody who's been an Israeli for a long time, you began life in Canada, and you lived part of the year in America, but you were an Israeli, and you wrote The Tragedy of Zionism, I don't know how many years ago. Have you yourself given up on the notion of what has been long called the two-state solution?
Oh, no, I haven't. I mean, you can't give up on the two-state solution because you have two separate, distinct national peoples. You have two languages, two different majority religions, two very different cultures. And at some level, you have to imagine drawing a political boundary around these cultural facts. But I think what Ramadan is implying, what I certainly do believe today, is that to make the two-state solution real, both sides are going to have to start coming to terms with confederal ideas. They're going to have to figure out ways that the existing integration will find political expression.
Bernie, where are you seeing signs of confederation in that sense?
Look, Jerusalem Arabs have ID cards. They work in the Israeli part of Jerusalem, the Israeli Jewish part of Jerusalem. Something like 50% of wage earners from East Jerusalem work in the West. And they've started to identify with the institutions of Israel, even if they're not identifying with the self-determination of the Jewish people. Ramadan, many people in Sur Bacher work in Israel, yes?
All the people working in the Israeli sites.
What kind of jobs are they doing?
They are many of jobs. They are working teachers, they are working in the engineerings and driver and everything they are working, that cleaning, everything they are working inside. We don't have jobs here. We don't have nothing to do in this area. All the jobs inside the Israel site.
Construction?
Also construction. Many of people working in construction.
Tourism?
Tourism also, they have a company of bus service for tourism. A lot of people here in the Palestinian side, they are working inside or in the south and the north Israel.
But it also should be clear that even though we're talking about construction, tourism jobs, etc., it's not all menial labor. The joke in West Jerusalem is that if the Arabs struck, the medical system in West Jerusalem would fall apart. That's how many doctors, anesthesiologists, nurses, and pharmacists there are coming from East Jerusalem to work in the West.
Bernie, recently the Trump administration moved the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. And how has that changed the status quo? How has that changed the picture?
Well, I think it's had the perverse effect of mobilizing Jerusalem Arabs, recognizing that they have to start acting and not simply wait for the great powers or for PA Israeli negotiations to make decisions for them over their heads. I actually talked to Eliezer Yari, a journalist, my friend, who introduced me to Ramadan.
So Eliezer, we're on your porch. Tell us what we're seeing from your porch here.
If you look to the south, you see Kibbutz Ramat Rachel.
Who lives in the very neighborhood that the embassy is.
The new embassy is right down the street from here. You find it ironic that it's there of all places. You want to say why?
I wouldn't call it ironic. I think it's futuristic. In a way, from my point of view, the story of Arnona, my neighborhood, and Sobacher is actually a microcosm of the entire conflict, and also a prospect of partnership and good neighbors, good relationship between the neighbors. It's funny, when they moved the embassy, actually they moved it to the neighborhood, they're very concerned about security. So they covered the fence, which was open, with some kind of a black plastic that now we cannot look at the new American embassy. But if you stand in Sulbacher, it's right in front of you. So the view of the new embassy is blocked from us, but it's open to the other side. And the ambassador is not here anyways, because he lives on the ocean in Tel Aviv. I hope that when he comes and lives here, he will wake up in the morning together with me to the sound of the prayers and realize the new embassy is right at the heart of the conflict. Their job is also to help to find a just solution for all the partners who actually are neighbors.
Given all the obstacles, what do you think is Ramadan's definition of victory?
I don't want to sound cynical, but first, the first thing that he will physically survive it.
So his car could get blown up by Hamas because of his secular politics, by Fatah because of his collaborationist reputation, by another family in Sorbacher because of his presumption.
And by Israelis because he's an Arab.
So it's when you speak of courage and surviving this election season, you literally mean the courage to survive.
Almost, yes.
Are you afraid for your life?
Look, I am, yes, I afraid for my life, but I don't afraid because I am now 50 years my age. So I don't think I will be more 50 years. So because that, I have to do something for my children, all the children from the Arab side, to change the situation. We need roads, we need schools, we need everything. We don't have nothing. So I start before 4 years to make just for service. So because that, I'm succeed.
Bernie, what are the chances that Ramadan wins his seat? And could his party hold real sway on the city council?
If you're asking, you know, how many seats is he going to win, I really can't say, because in many ways, this is a test also for the Palestine Authority's moral prestige in East Jerusalem. And it's quite possible that there will be a very small turnout. But if there will be a big one, and if you look at the polls, only 14% of Arabs in East Jerusalem oppose running. 58% approve, according to the poll. So There's obviously a shift on the street. A lot of Palestinians are beginning to see that this is their fate and they had better make the best of it.
And they're making that decision out of a sense of resignation?
Well, resignation, but it's merged with a sense that what do you lose? If in the end there's going to be a Palestine capital in East Jerusalem, having seats on the city council will not preempt that. It does, in a way, imply resignation, but it doesn't really give away the game, and in some ways prepares the ground for the only realistic kind of two-state solution which you will eventually have.
Bernie Avishai, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
That was Bernard Avishai, a contributor to The New Yorker who spoke with Ramadan Dabash, who's running for city council in Jerusalem. The Jerusalem elections are on October 30th.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.